Okay. Well, cool, cool. Yeah. So, despite her, I'm sort of I like usually like a standing and jumping around, but here I've got to type. So, you forgive me for sitting now down here. So we'll talk about embeddable code playgrounds specifically in a dogs. And let me ask, how many of you prefer dull static dogs compared to interactive dogs? Ah, because you probably have to maintain them, eh? Oh, okay. Okay, I thought you were writing dogs. Yeah, well, understood. Understood. Well, just so you know who is who, I'm Peter Zaitsev. Anton is actually the author of a code we'll talk about, but unfortunately he couldn't get a visa to come here, so you're stuck with me. But if you have any like a super advanced questions, there is Anton contacts, and you can send it to him. He is very responsive guy. Mm. So, if you think about their more interactive or code playground, right, interactive scenarios, they generally better work for explain the topics and also allowing to engage the reader, right? Maybe not all the readers, but I think the best ones, the most curious ones, right, which actually want to understand how things work. So we'll look at three items in this short presentation: their use cases, the approach that we have in this open source project, and implementation. First, let's look at their tutorials, right? If you look at the tutorials, you often want to explain something by example, right? And we can look at this very, let's say, simple case. We are actually using some real live or, you know, SAS out there, which is, provides a very simple database where we can, you know, push some simple JSON object, right? We can go ahead and run it, and actually what happens in this case, well, does the interaction as described above, right, and sends their object to the database, right? Well, what we can also do is to go ahead and go ahead to modify that, right, and run, and then we can see this object was stored. Now we want to demo the cloud API in this case to play with it. We can go ahead and you also use the get one, right, to play with it somewhere. Let's say you have a second message, and we have, right, and if you can say, is there like some message number 45, and we can see, well, it's not there. Again, if you really want to experiment and play what works and how it works, that can be a very beautiful way to do it. Another cool way what we found it being used is their release notes, right? So what we have in this case is this example, right? If you look at with Golang, they have just made a recently very, you know, important change in how the variables, you know, operate. Right, related to coroutines, right? If you look in this case, that makes look like a little bit, you know, counterintuitive, right? We have a, you know, coroutines called in the loop, right? And for some reason, they are not not showing different loop counters, right? Well, in Golang 1.22, that was fixed, right? If you guys want to showcase their feature in the release domain documentations, but really let people to kind of maybe explore and poke holes in this case. I think that's kind of a wonderful tool. I'm not sure about you. I often then read in some features, well, I do a lot of work with databases, and they say, hey, we implemented that new feature, right? And I want to poke a hole. Oh, did you implement that option? Or it does kind of it work in this way? And that is a very easy way to play with it without going through with all their installation process, right? And so on and so forth. Another example we can see is some of their describing some of their options in a documentation, right? Like if you think in this case as a curl, everybody could use curl. It has this wonderful JSON options with this very cool, correct, but also kind of very kind of mouthful example, which we can also go ahead and provide an example for, saying, hey, that is a JSON object. We post that to the server. That is, what we get in return. And this HTTP bin, that is actually another like a well-known open source project, which is essentially, allows you to, post something to that and then get in return, right, what exactly you posted without header and so on and so forth. Very convenient for debugging. What you can also do here in this case, if you are curious, let's say, well, interesting, right? So curl has this support for JSON. Does it validate JSON or just, sends whatever stuff we have? Well, let's check it out. Well, we can see in this case we are getting the error response back from the server rather some sort of curl output. That means it doesn't. Again, that can be very helpful to get the user to explore kind of what he's not very certain, which may not be quite explained in this portion of documentation, right? Or we can also showcase example what exists in the docs, how we can send the output from a file, right? Pretty simple here. Okay. If you are looking at deep dives, there may be some interest in terms of more functionality. Go into a database space where I spend a lot of my time. Let's say we want to describe what is an absurd in SQL. Right? Anybody heard what is absurd? Right. Well, that is something like we want to insert the data, but if it's out there, we want to update it. Very common. Okay, so we want to say, let's say we have this table out there, right, and we want to go ahead and use their MySQL insert or replace syntax, right, then we want to, as I said, like to update one employee's salary and then also add another one. Well, we can go ahead and run it. Like, why I use this as example here? Because what you can see is we are not showing everything in example, right? We are working with some sort of like a seed data, which was pre-created as a part of a previous scenario, right? Which is very common. Here is also another example of the same thing, but with Postgres, right, where we're using a different scenario, right? And you may ask, well, okay, this is how it works, but I know also the PostgreSQL has a syntax on conflict, do nothing, right? So what would that be if that's what we do? Oh, well, in this case, we can see what Emma's salary, right, which was a conflicting row, was not changed. So again, we can play with those things. Okay, well, these are kind of setting landscape, I think, what things can be useful. But now let's look in terms of what is, approach and how it works. Now, if you think about the tools and a doc creating, right, you would find what it is not easy to find the good technical writers, right, or documentation authors, right, and they also can be rather let's call it like a selfish affair time, right? They don't want to do a lot of useless crap, right? In this case, so we want to make sure the writer experience is important, not just the reader experience, which we already defined, so has wants those interactive playground. So what approach we took in this project is saying how we can make it as sort of like a seamless as possible, right? We don't want to say, hey, you know what, you are going to create our iterative code playground in completely different tooling, right, separate from documentation, right? And then figure out, is that going to live in the same version control, right, and so on and so forth, right? Or, things like that. What you want in this case is to have your documentation, right, which was this, right, just as easy as possible, add their ability to run, to edit, and run, right? So you can say, hey, we added, you can see the run and edit here, and if I run, you can see what the output of that documentation example is. So how can we approach that so it is easy on integration, which is easy on writing? Well, it's actually quite easy. So what we have is you are writing documentation in the same format as you got used to, right? Let's say maybe it's a markup language, as in this example, or something else. And then you can embed this like a code API widget. That widget itself will figure out the previous code block and make it interactive, right? So there is no like some special thing required, and that pretty much works in any documentation thing which already exists, right? So you can see that example here. Well, you know, the code which existed here just gets interactive. So, well, of course, hello world is always easier, right? Let's look at some more complicated examples. One, I think, which is very important is the template approach, right? That, I think, what I briefly mentioned was, already. If I want to show something like this, right, that is like a relatively, you know, complicated query, right? For that to be meaningful, I also need to pre-generate table, in this case, which I probably do not want to have on my documentation thing. And this is designed done by providing a template. So a template in this case is basically something which is run before the scenario is done, right? And in this case, I can write some text and, hey, I create a table, but I'm not really specifying all the comments because there's irrelevant in this case. I populate it with some data, and then I have a code, the code which was created before, right? That is how, how a template would look like. So I can highlight, right, where exactly in the context, I want to run that code, which was which is interactive part of the documentation. Okay, so here is another thing, which you will find quite helpful. So, if you are building some sort of tutorial, right? Building tutorial, right? You would often want to say, hey, there is actually multiple steps where I need the user to go through them one after another. And that is an example here. What you can see is what we are defining the function in a one code block, and then we are using that function in another code block, right? We can, and I'll show in a second, define dependency between those code blocks. That means when you are running this second section, the first section would always be run. Like, let me, I don't know, let's say break this code, right, for example, and then I can go ahead and run the second one. It says, oh, well, you know, things got broken, right, on the previous stuff, right? And how that works is what we identify, we refer to the first one as a cell number 2, right, and then identify the second snippet as a cell which depends on a cell number 2, right? That means pretty much that the content of that cell is going to be run when the second cell is run, right, even if you as a user don't click run, right? If you say, hey, I don't want to go through all those like a 5 steps in tutorial, I want to start with step number 6 because that is where the real meat happens, you can do it, right? You can just jump in the middle. Okay. So finally, so how does that all things work? Well, there are actually a couple of ways it can work. One is we can have a browser playground and then a sandbox environment, right, which is, you know, pretty much Docker-based, right? And that's, you know, where we can use browser API, JavaScript, and whatever. The second approach, right, we can have also is WebAssembly. Right, so if you can say, hey, you know what, we want no kind of server component, it's right, it runs completely in a browser, we can do that. But the problem with WebAssembly, it can be sometimes heavy, right? Especially saying, well, you know what, I want to showcase how, you know, like a Postgres operates when, you know, getting all that Postgres pulled in, WebAssembly started, right? That may not be the best experience, right, especially with slower connections, right? So that is where their Docker, right, is can be very helpful, right? So with a Docker, you can implement wherever you want, and the setup of this service is it's an open source project, right? So you can roll your own as well. There is a variety of existing playgrounds which are supported at you know, CodeAPI website, right? Which can get you started pretty quickly. Yeah, so here are some examples, and I will of course share slides, if you actually slides are online with this live tutorial. You can see there's like a number of projects already started to use that with you know, pretty good success, and you can see with codeipi.org showcase, that is where all the examples exist, right? Here are specific projects, right? There are kind of two sub-repositories. One is for JavaScript kind of client side, another for the server side. Again, it's split because you may just want to use their client side, right? If you're using like JavaScript or something, then you don't need a server component. And if you want to ask some more questions for Anton, right, or get some feedback, antonz.org is his website. So that's all I had, and I would be happy to answer questions or get out of the way, because I think I'm the last thing standing between you and your beers.
Yeah, we started with docs as code, and now we've gone to code as docs at the end. any questions?
I did not understand. The backend is also part of this project or not?
Yes. So in this case, CodeAPI, that is your Docker backend, write code IPJS, that's your thing. So both of them are open source. What do you mean?
So, I mean, is it possible if I develop an API and I want to figure out what parts of my API are not intuitive and I have my user experimenting inside this environment, is there some effect?
Oh, you mean in terms of what people run, right, what kind of... So not right now.